Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today. He is ill and has the day off, but I do have a very special guest, Dan Wokey, Orange County Register, and the latest victim of one of the children of a LA Clippers coaching staff. Dan, how's it going? And how's your pride after Howard Eisley's son took it to you?
Oh, that's horrible.
What happened?
It's been a rough 22 hours or so. So after practice, I don't know. It's weird because, like, I don't have kids, so it's hard for me to know how old he was.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I can never tell the age of a child.
Yeah, he could be 4, he could have been 14. I really have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess probably 7 or 8 years old. After the game, I'm just kind of shooting around a little bit on one of the side hoops. After practice yesterday. And he came up to me and was like, hey, let's play one-on-one. And I'm like, okay, whatever, I'll be a nice guy. And then he's like, you better play hard. So I chucked the ball to him, and I'm like, okay, here you go. And he took a shot. He's like, where's the three-point line? I'm like, right there, it's good. Shot it, made it, three goggles.
Three goggled you.
He started taunting me. And then I was in that weird spot where it's like, okay, like one fine, you know, we did winners out, so I passed to him again. He hit it again. And this time he three goggled and then did the Nate Robinson, 3-point celebration. Where let me say this. It wasn't just a three goggle. He'd make the three, put the three goggle on, and then run like in a half circle. Like you would take a lap. And it was like, I was in a weird spot. I didn't know if I should defend, really try to de-up. Because here's the other thing too. What if I tried and he did that?
Yeah.
Like, I really couldn't handle that. So I just kind of took it on the chin, and it was horrible.
No, that's a good strategy to stay back. I mean, that would be hard for me. I'm psychotically competitive at times, and so I think I probably would have just, like, you know, quote-unquote jokingly D'd him up really hard one time. But if he had gotten me, I mean, while you're trying, there's no way to play that off.
Yeah, that's why generally in life, for me, I just try to set the bar really low.
Sure.
I tend not to disappoint myself that way. So that's usually been my strategy. It's worked so far.
Yeah, I had a weird moment at the gym this morning where I usually just go on the basketball court and warm up before I pretend to do any weightlifting or anything like that. And I mainly just go – I have a gym membership so I can shoot free throws. But as I was shooting, I was the only one on the court. And
you and Dwight Howard.
Yeah, me and Dwight. I think we're both hated by Orlando for some reason. And so while I'm shooting around, like, I'm just taking free throws. There's no game going on. There's nothing. There's this old Asian lady who's, like, walking the track. There's, like, this raised track above the basketball court, and you can look onto it. And she, after every lap, she would stop and watch me for, like, a good 4 or 5 minutes and, like, legitimately watch me. Like, I could see her following me with her eyes. And
maybe
that
she's
was
a shooting coach.
Maybe she is. I mean, that could have used some pointers or what. It didn't feel good today. But it was the thing where, like, it was so weird. Like, I've shot in front of crowds before and, you know, like, it not giant crowds, but decent-sized crowds. And that was the most pressure I've ever felt. Just one old lady watching me.
Yeah, I'm sure she was judging you pretty hard.
Oh, as she should, yeah.
I mean, I can tell you that just in my everyday life, there's usually at least 2 60 to 65-year-old Asian ladies following me around.
It does.
And I don't know what to do about it.
You are known for that.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Pied Piper.
Yep, exactly. So, okay, with Howard Eisley's son celebrating against you, this goes beyond the Clippers roster. That's the whole,
yeah.
This is Clippers culture is to celebrate. And they celebrated a dunk better than anything I've ever seen the other night. I mean, everyone went crazy. You were there for the dunk. What was it like in person? Did you realize, like, the magnitude of everything happening?
Yeah. So the three best ones I've seen in person in 2 years covering the Clippers were the Perkins dunk was outrageous.
Yeah.
And just partly, too, because of that atmosphere was great that night because, you know, everybody knew it was a big game. Then I would say probably the Blake Griffin dunked on Spencer Hawes earlier this year in Philadelphia.
Oh, that was good, yeah.
But this one is, like, right up there with the Perkins. This was, like, after it happened, like, it felt like everybody in the crowd needed to smoke a cigarette. It was, like, there was, like, this weird, like, kind of, like, everybody saw it, everybody experienced it together, and then there was like this weird kind of like, who's going to bring us a sandwich type moment.
Right.
And it was awesome. I mean, you know, the fact that, like, you could see where the press was sitting, it's kind of like in Minnesota where you're kind of on the baseline and a little bit off to the side.
Yeah.
And it was coming at us. So the play is coming at us, and you could see when DeAndre slipped the screen and Chris threw the lob, like, you had a really good view of it. You could see it kind of from Brandon Knight's perspective. But, like, you know, it was clear that Brandon Knight didn't see DeAndre Jordan.
Right.
There's no way he saw him. Because there's no way he would have done that if he saw him. And DeAndre said he didn't see Brandon Knight until he caught it. So it's sort of like this perfect storm where it's like that split second where both guys were in the same place at the same time. And it was like, this is going to go horribly for somebody. And predictably, it went horribly for Brandon Knight.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I think my favorite reaction, I mean, everything was really great, and people are still talking about it. Obviously, we're talking about it. But I think my favorite reaction was the quotes afterwards where Blake Griffin, I basically told DeAndre Jordan, don't be dumb. This is your best dunk.
Yeah, that, like, was funny.
That was, like, just that reaction alone of, like, don't try to undersell this at all. Like, be real about it. Like, that I really enjoyed.
It was weird because DeAndre has, like, this giant personality to begin with, and he was very humble about it, which is weird. Generally speaking, you know, he kind of, you know, yesterday at practice did like his whole self-deprecating thing where, you know, I asked him if he was on Twitter, what Twitter was like afterwards when he got home, and he's like, you know, I gained, you know, maybe 2,000 new followers. I'm like, that's it for that? He's like, yeah, I thought they'd invite me to the White House, but, you know, they didn't. Like, stuff like he was pretty funny about it. And then I think the other really funny thing, too, was Brandon Knight on Twitter.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great reaction.
It was, like, the perfect way to handle it, right?
Yeah. Because I was, you know, a little worried when he didn't talk to reporters after the game. Like, I understood, but you're a little worried, like, a guy might get defensive about that. But just to laugh at yourself for it, that's the way to go.
Yeah, DeAndre joked back to me, he's like, he should have checked the scouting report closer. It wasn't like, you know, like, not that there's this big, giant Brandon Knight. Because that's the thing, is, like, DeAndre likes Brandon Knight, he knows him. Chris knows him. Chris Paul knows him really well.
Yeah.
Like, they felt a little bad for him, but in that moment, like, I don't know if you watched the clip again. Another really good reaction was Matt Barnes.
Yeah.
So Matt Barnes, it was funny. Jay had already described it. He said it was like in Scooby Doo when people like get up to run and they don't move and their feet move. He does this thing where, like, DeAndre dunks. He's in the corner. And he just turns and starts running the other way. Like, not like on defense.
Right.
Like, I can't be close to this because I will do something bad. It was awesome. It was, I mean, I don't. How do you feel about this kind of, like, weird backlash to it?
I just feel like it's always this thing of it, it's forced in the sense that you, it's just it seems to be a natural thing about our society now where people love something, so then you're like, oh, well, I want to be different. I'm unique. I'm this unique snowflake, so I'm going to hate it. Like, I'm just going to be mad, or I'm going to find something wrong with it. It's like, I've really gotten into this point, especially with, there's the whole, like, hero ball, our superstars taking good shots at the end of close games kind of thing. And I got to the point where I was like, I appreciate the analysis of it and the theory behind, like, wanting better shots, but sometimes it's just fun. Like, sometimes hero ball is just fun, and dunks like that are just fun, and that's kind of where I've slipped into more of, like, this out of, like, trying to be analytical and more into, like, I just want to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, for me it was, like, the thing that, I mean, I'm referring to the Wojnarowski column, and there was some reaction on Twitter to it. It was sort of, like, kind of, like, pick on somebody your own size type mentality. It's like, what's he supposed to do?
Right. Is he supposed to see Brandon Knight is there, catch the ball, come down, and then, like, shoot a fadeaway?
Yeah, right? Well, that was, like, the thing in the Woj story, and I really like it. Adrian's a great writer, you know, one of the best we have who covers the NBA. But, you know, he took it as an opportunity that, like, Brandon Knight did the right thing, and DeAndre Jordan did the wrong thing, kind of. And it was sort of like, there was one paragraph in the story where he kind of alluded to, like, oh, great, congratulations, you make $40 million, and all you can do is dunk, type of a thing. And it's like, I don't know, that just kind of seemed to me like going out on St. Patrick's Day and just telling everybody how horrible they're going to feel on Sunday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, hey, you really want that 10th beer? Well, you're going to feel horrible.
Right.
You know, just you're going to have a miserable hangover. I mean, it was sort of like, yeah, DeAndre Jordan's totally a flawed player, but he's also incredibly exciting, and, like, that's fun, and it should be fun. Now, I get a little bit of what he was saying, like, yeah, it was great that Brandon and I challenged, and I think, you know, I want to see more players challenge because it gives us the opportunity to see more amazing highlights. Like,
right.
I want to see Eric Bledsoe challenged Dwayne Wade at the rim earlier this year, and he blocked a shot. Like, that can happen.
Yeah.
But it can also happen where you just get totally flushed on, and it becomes, like, you know, you become famous.
Well, Mike Prada at SB Nation had a great breakdown of the play, like, defensively, saying, you know, a better defensive rotation takes away the lob completely, and he's right. And Brandon Knight actually, he challenged and technically did the right thing, but he played bad help defense on the entire play.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was something that Chris Paul had seen, like, four plays before,
yeah,
not surprisingly. And he had been trying to get DeAndre to roll hard and slip the screen for four or five possessions, too. So, I mean, they were doing that for a while.
Right. The thing that kind of, like, makes me think is, like, last year, the Clipper team really became hated. Like, outside of Clipper fans, like, people really got tired of Blake, tired of DeAndre celebrating, tired of Chris Paul, you know, working officials and stuff like that. And especially in the playoffs, people seem to be, like, really glad that this team lost. But this year, they seem so much closer. I don't know if it's, like, I mean, I'm a huge Jamal Crawford fan, so I love crediting guys like nice guys like Jamal Crawford with affecting the team. But this Clippers team seems so close and so happy to celebrate, not in a way of embarrassing the opponent, but just appreciating the cool things they do. Because if you want them to stop celebrating dunks, then stop giving up dunks.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, I mean, that's sort of like the old adage. I mean, the Clippers have said that this year about the Warriors. It's like, at times, it's like, yeah, if you don't like the Warriors bench being into the game, like, play better against Golden State. I think you hit on something there. And it's hard to tell because there's no real way to quantify chemistry on a team. Because you never hear about, oh my gosh, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Kemba Walker are so close. You know, like, the Bobcats have this amazing chemistry. Like, nobody would ever say that. And they might. I don't know. You know, they might all really like each other. You know, B.J. Mullins might have everybody over to his house. Byron Mullins, sorry.
Oh, right.
Apologies. You know, he might have everybody over to his house for dinner every Sunday night, like, you know, to watch The Walking Dead. I have no idea. But the Clippers are legitimately close. Like, they really like each other. And it's something where, you know, after games, especially after wins, when you've got, you know, kids in the locker room and stuff like that, thankfully not crossing me up or anything like that, but, you know, you've got, you know, Chris's son over playing with Matt Barnes' sons, and then, you know, you have Blake joking with them and DeAndre joking with them and Lamar coming over, and, you know, it's like, it sounds hokey to say this, but it's like, you know, they talk about family and it feels that way. A really good example was when your favorite guy, Jamal, had a, you know, his fiance had a daughter earlier this month.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said he woke up the next morning into about 20 different text messages from players and people in the organization, which is like, you know, that's great. You know what I mean? That's not outrageously, you know, unexpected. I think that would happen on a lot of teams. But I think the second part was then that team had shoot around this morning. That morning, took a photo that said, like, you know, welcome to the Clipper family, London. Like, they held up the sign. You know, they took the time to do something like that, post that on Instagram, send it to Jamal. And he was blown away.
Yeah.
I mean, he went on Twitter and he said, like, the Clippers organization is the best in the NBA. I mean, just crazy talk. You know, like, things that you would never have heard, you know, 4 years ago. I mean, that would be, like, in terms of, like, things that nobody would ever say. And I really think that that's been one of the things that Vinny Del Negro deserves a lot of credit for, and definitely one of the things that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin deserve a lot of credit for, is kind of like installing that everybody love everybody mentality, you know, and it seems genuine. You know, Matt Barnes told me that most teams that he's been on, it's about, you know, 50-50 in terms of if you like somebody.
Yeah.
And that it gets, you develop these little pockets, you know, of obviously, like compared it to high school. So, like, you get, like, your little cliques. You get the guys that go out, you get the guys with kids, you get the guys, you know, with wives and all of that stuff. And those guys get dinner separately. The Clippers really aren't like that much. There are pockets of guys that get along, you know, better than others, but there's still like this sense that he said that like everybody just has genuine care for one another. And when somebody has a birthday party at a club, or when somebody, like, just little things, like, you know, guys show up. You know, after games, guys go to Ryan Hollins' restaurant in Beverly Hills. You know, whether they live in Beverly Hills or not.
Wait, Ryan Hollins, you know, has a restaurant?
Yeah, he does. Good times, right? but, yeah, like, guys will go, you know. And it's just kind of that, like, that sense of support that I think the way this team has been constructed matters, because they, you know, it's important that DeAndre Jordan likes Lamar Odom, because DeAndre Jordan has to give minutes to Lamar Odom.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, if he hated him, you know what I mean, he'd sit there on the bench and sue, and it would make it harder. Now, he's not happy to give minutes to Lamar Odom. Nobody's happy to not play. But I think it makes it a little easier to swallow.
That you do, you bring up a great point, one about it being a credit to Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, but Vinny Del Negro is a hard coach to judge, because he is a guy that you see making mistakes with timeouts and with strategies throughout the game, and it seems like he doesn't have control, but his teams have always seemed pretty close, and he, you know, young players under his watch have developed pretty nicely. And where do you see him as a coach? He's not one of the best in the league, but maybe he's one of the most important in the league?
I think so. I think the biggest thing that he does, and it sounds silly, is that I think a big part of his coaching strategy is to make sure that when he asks a guy to do something, it's something that player can do.
Right.
You know, so he doesn't overcoach. And I think there's a tendency. I mean, that's not – I think he's capable of overcoaching, certainly. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I think that's one thing he's done well with this team, is that he's kind of said, hey, Matt Barnes, you know, we're going to let you shoot as many threes as you want when you're open, because I trust you. We're going to let you cut, and you're going to play defense. And that's it. You know, don't worry about shooting 16-footers. Like, we're never going to ask you to create your own offense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they put him in a position to succeed, and he's having the best year of his career. You know, Jamal Crawford has been told, hey, Jamal, we're going to not ask you to guard Kobe Bryant. Like, that's not your job. You know, we're going to try to make you play as little point guard as possible. We just want you to kind of do Jamal Crawford things. And I think he deserves credit for that. There's been some things with rotations and stuff. I think he doesn't even 100% know what the Clippers have yet.
Well, it's got to be weird because they've had so many injuries.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they haven't, you know, you missed Chauncey Billups for, you know, the first half of the season. And then he comes back and he's on a minutes restriction. And then, you know, okay, everybody gets healthy for a day or two, and then Caron Butler gets hurt, or, you know, or Chauncey has a setback, or Jamal turns an ankle, or Bledsoe's calf tightens up. I mean, they've had these little things. Now, they've been fairly lucky in terms of the big injury. Like, that hasn't come yet. But in terms of those little things, it's forced him to not really settle into the rotation that I think he wants to, and he doesn't really know yet. And with, you know, 17 games left, I mean, that's definitely something that they're going to have to figure out going into the playoffs. I think that's where their kind of two biggest areas of growth exist. It's weird to talk about a team still getting better after 65 games.
Yeah.
But I think Chauncey Billups can make them better, because I think Chauncey Billups will get healthier, and he'll be less rusty, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that can make them better. And I think as they get healthier, I think Vinny has a shot to make them better if he can pull the right strings when he has kind of every option available to him.
Is there a concern that Chauncey still thinks too highly of himself in terms of focus of the offense? Because he just came out, he was on the radio either today or yesterday in New York saying that, you know, if the Knicks could have kept him and signed Tyson Chandler, the Knicks would have a title. And validity of that withstanding, like, it's he clearly has confidence in himself, which is good. You want him to have confidence, but does he have too much confidence?
You know, I don't know. At this point, I think there are times when he does stuff where you look at him and you say, ugh, you know, should he just become a spot up shooter at this point? And I don't think he's ready to do that. Actually, I know he's not. That's not easy for him. I think he's kind of in the transitional part of his career right now, where
he's trying to balance what he used to be able to do with what he can now do.
Right.
You know, and some guys handle that better than others. I mean, but I think if we look at the games the Clippers played going into the All-Star break, when Chauncey really got into a nice rhythm against the Rockets and the Lakers, I mean, he scored 20 in each of those games, I think. I mean, he got wide open looks and knocked them down. And that's where he's important. It's almost like you can deal with him with, like, the occasional bad post-up, you know, or him trying to get to the foul line and not getting the call. You can deal with that stuff because he stretches defenses. Teams still guard him like they have to. And when the Clippers are healthy, the guys that benefits, I mean, that benefits Chris Paul because that opens up lanes, benefits Caron Butler because it pulls defenses up towards, you know, the free throw line, and so now the corner three is wide open. It helps out Blake. It helps out, I mean, it's the difference. And no disrespect to, I'm sure, you know, internet favorite Willie Green, who did, I mean, really a fairly admirable job filling in.
He was decent.
You know, I think one of the best corner three shooters in the league for a while. You know, but teams guard Willie Green differently than they guard Chauncey Billups. And having that extra guy out there, I think, is sort of like the Clippers early in the season had a thing where they just wanted everybody to be a threat. And if they felt like everybody was a threat offensively, they were going to be really, really difficult to guard.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where they're getting closer to that. Now, some of that still, especially if you look at their crunch time lineups, you know, if Lamar Odom kind of, it's weird. He's been kind of another guy who, see, it's funny. I think Chauncey thinks maybe a little too much of himself in terms of, you know, he maybe thinks he's the player he was 3 or 4 years ago, whereas Lamar maybe thinks too little of himself and doesn't shoot enough, isn't confident enough. It's weird. There's like a weird kind of, you know, they're almost exact opposites in that way.
The thing that I've been most fascinated with this Clippers team is just kind of the Blake Griffin seems to have matured so much in such a little amount of time. Whereas last year, I mentioned earlier, like last year, he even got on my nerves. I just thought there was too much preening to the camera. There's too much flexing. It wasn't even a celebratory thing. It was just like there was an arrogance, like a distasteful arrogance about him. Fair or not, like that's just kind of how it seemed to come through with many fans. Whereas this year, he's doing so many little things to make himself a better player that it just looks like not only has his game matured, but he kind of gets where he needs to head now to take the next step.
Oh, I think he 100% gets it. Everybody who I talk to just, you know, gushes when they talk about his work ethic. I mean, Bob Tate is a Clippers shooting coach. He's the guy who made Jason Kidd a confident shooter.
Yeah.
So he's worked, he's worked with all these guys, and he says that nobody he's worked with has ever worked as hard as Blake to get better. I mean, I think we've seen that now where it's in rhythm. Blake is actually a pretty good mid-range shooter.
Yeah, he is.
At this point, you know, he's not a bad free throw shooter anymore. He could still be better, but they look at him and they say with his work ethic and where his mechanics are, people think he'll shoot 75, 77% from the free throw line. I mean, that's amazing to say that you think somebody could be, you know, 20% better than they were.
That's a big jump.
But it's realistic, I think, with him because of how hard he works. I mean, he's a guy who definitely understands basketball. He's a really smart guy, is really what it comes down to. And he's really self-aware. And I think he knows where his shortcomings are. As far as, like, people not liking him, I think, you know, obviously people like to have seen him get better. I think, like, the quality of his commercials has helped.
Yes.
You know, in a weird way. It's like, oh, yeah, hey, he's funny. You know what I mean? He can make fun of himself. I think people have cut him a little more slack. And I don't know, it's crazy to think this, but because he missed that first year, you know, this is his third year in the league, really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a third-year player. So, I mean, do people hold Kyrie Irving to that same, I mean, Kyrie Irving's in the second year, but do people hold Kyrie Irving to the same standard that they held Blake Griffin to last year?
Definitely not.
It feels like he's been around longer. And so, I mean, this is a guy whose game is still growing. I don't know. I think I wanted to ask you this, kind of going forward. So, they're kind of, I think, out of big moves
right.
going forwards. They maybe have one more if they want to kind of try to get three max guys together and clear everybody else off the books. But do you think moving forwards, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are good enough to deal with Durant and Westbrook long term?
I absolutely do. Just, if you had asked me this a year ago, I wouldn't have had a good answer for you. But just seeing the improvements that Blake's made, and not that it's such a cliche of, oh, well, now he takes it seriously. I'm sure he took it seriously before, but I think he just understands it better now. And let's just say I have kind of a player crush on Chris Paul. Like he's my favorite player in the NBA right now and has been for a couple of years. Like even past, like Ricky's fun. I love Ricky, but in terms of just like pure basketball player, like Chris Paul's my favorite.
And Ricky's more adorable.
Ricky's adorable. Ricky's like a fun rom-com to watch, but you're not watching Shawshank, you know? Like you can have a good time. It's not the same. Chris Paul is just like, I think he is so good. I think he's clearly the third best player in the league. And I think he probably has been for a couple of years now. And I think that the gap between Blake Griffin and Kevin Durant is significant, but I think it's closable, even with Durant getting better. Not that Blake's ever going to pass Durant, but I think it's close enough that you surround those two with the right players, which it looks like this Clippers team, you know, they have good role players in places you need to have role players. If they can get Lamar Odom right and if Chauncey's healthy, I think they're good enough to challenge the Thunder now. Not just moving forward, but now.
I mean, I know that they feel like they should have beaten the Thunder twice this year.
Yeah.
And that's cliche. I mean, like, everybody always says that. Like, oh, we really, like, let this one get away. But in Oklahoma City early in the year, before Thanksgiving, they had just beaten San Antonio in San Antonio without Chauncey Billups. I'm not sure if Karan played. He might not have. And they played Oklahoma City, and Chris Paul was horrible.
Yeah.
Like, he had just, like, a dreadful game, and they lose in overtime. Like, that was one where they felt like, okay, we probably should have won that. And then I even though they were down big on a couple Sundays ago in the Ibaka game, I know they feel like they should have won that game too.
Yeah.
And I love that that's the Ibaka game.
The Ibaka game.
Talk about weird things to see in person. That was incredible.
What was that like, seeing that in person and just like, what was the fallout of the team afterwards? Did they even really know? Did they have an idea? Because it was such a tight moment of the game.
Yeah, it was something I think, you know, Staples Center is really good at showing, like, instigating, like, near riots with replay.
Yes.
They're really good at that. So they showed that replay a bunch when they were looking at it. And then, I mean, I think there was, the one reaction was, you know, like, Matt Barnes was like, you know, if that was me, I'd be in jail right now.
Sure.
Type of reaction, you know, where they thought it was kind of, you know, a little sketchy that way. And then the other reaction was, it was strange. I was in the Oklahoma City locker room after the game because Serge was like the last person out of the shower. And to his credit, he talked. And, I mean, he gave kind of his version of events. And, you know, but we kept grilling him. There was maybe five or six reporters that kept grilling him. And Kevin Durant walked by and was like, why don't you guys ask him about how good of a game he played? And he was angry. And I wanted to be like, I mean, in that situation, this is where there's like a disconnect between athletes and reporters, I think, is that, you know, no, when you hit a guy in the nuts, like, that negates anything. He could have had 50, and I would have still asked him about the time he hit the guy in the nuts.
Right.
You know, and maybe that makes me a bad person, and I don't understand basketball or whatever, but, like, it was so bizarre. The Clippers have had a weird... They have a weird legacy of nut shots, too.
There is, because there was the whole, like, Chris Kaman got, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, Reggie Evans has been known, you know, and Chris had the thing in college.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's weird.
It's kind of their thing.
Every time I see it, I think of that, I don't know, do you watch King of the Hill ever?
Sure.
There was an episode where Bobby, learns to fight.
Yes.
And he goes to a women's defense class,
yes.
And every time he kicks somebody in the groin and says, that's my purse, I don't know you.
Yeah.
I just imagine Serge Ibaka doing that when he hit Blake Griffin. That's my purse, I don't know you.
Oh, Before I let you go, and thank you for your time today, is it weird covering the Clippers and thinking about possibly covering them in the finals? I mean, it's not crazy to think that this team could get to the finals. I mean, certainly not crazy to think they'd get to the Western Conference Finals. And this is the Clippers. Like you mentioned earlier, they haven't had that big injury yet. There is that sense of the Clippers curse and everything. Is it weird seeing the culture kind of change?
For me, it's mostly like I hear stories of that. This is my second year covering the team. So I started after the Cruz trade. Right. So that was kind of but even living out here and seeing the team the year before, I think after the Mozgov game, things started to change a little bit where it was like, okay, the Clippers are fun to watch. Yeah. They became fun to watch right away. And then when Chris came, they became good. And then this year they became contenders. It's been sort of like this little growth process. So it's not that strange to really think about it that way. I mean, you do, where it gets weird sometimes is when you think about the fact that they're like, 18 games better than the Lakers.
Right. That's weird.
That's strange.
Yeah.
And there's still kind of, I think, for people out here, a lot of people still look at the Lakers and say, well, if they were able to get to that sixth seed and play the Clippers, they could beat the Clippers. And, while that's certainly possible, the Lakers haven't been close to beating the Clippers this year.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clippers do a fantastic job making the Lakers look, to use Kobe's terms, old and slow.
Yeah, it's not a good matchup just logistically at all for the Lakers.
So it's like it's weird, but there's still that kind of feeling that, that exists, the Lakers will figure it out and the Clippers won't. But other than that, I mean, these guys, they know it's just that they changed the game a little bit, And it's they're completely a different team than they were 4 years ago. The organization is McDonald's showing spending money. It's a lot of things changed, and it's easy when you get the number one pick and it's Blake Griffin, and then you trade and you get Chris Paul, like it works out. I mean, it's funny. It seemed like that curse, could have reared its head when they made the trade they had to make, the Baron Davis deal.
Yeah.
And that turns out to be a number one pick. That turns out to be Kyrie Irving. And you're like, oh, again, here it comes again. But the Chris trade just negates all of that, and it's like he doesn't care about this stuff. He likes it. He likes kind of having that little brother mentality because, he feels like he's on a team that'll scrap and do anything to win just like he will.
Right.
As a person.
Well, Dan, I appreciate your time. I know you gotta go get to practice so you can take on another Clippers child. Yep. And I say take him in the post.
Not today. I'm gonna wear the least basketball friendly clothes I can find just so I have an excuse.
Just a suit of armor. Just put on your suit of armor. And if you do play, take him into the post, throw an elbow. Kids are liars. No one's going to believe a kid that you elbowed him.
Well, I think part of what I want to do, I know that would be the way to go. I would also kind of like to make a three in his face and three guy going back, just so he knows.
That would look really mature for anybody that just walks in at that point.
I'm just like, it's in your face.
Yeah.
Like, just yelling at a kid. That'd be great.
Dan Wilkie, we can follow you at Dan Wilkie Sports with WOIKE on Twitter. Read all your stuff at OCRegistered.com. Dan, thank you so much.
Anytime, Zach.